Ben Reed here with the Next Gen Sales Leader Podcast. This is going to be all about email deliverability. I have assembled the Avengers, the best in the business, the smartest guys in the room of cold email deliverability. We're going to have a round table with 9 of the top experts in the world, and we're going to jump in right now. This is co-hosted with my friend, Christian Oland, who is the founder of RevGen and RevReply, and he is the guy who is going to also be helping me ask these experts hard questions about deliverability. Also, this episode is sponsored by my company, RevOps.com. Which centralizes all your scattered GTM prospect lists into one unified platform so you can become the source of truth for every client, eliminate repetitive list scraping and list deduplication while powering better GTM dashboards with better data you control, no data locked in siloed tools. So go ahead and check out RevOps.com. We're going to jump into the roundtable right now, and I'll see you guys in there.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for everyone coming on today. Hopefully this will give all of these great technologists and subject matter experts a chance to kind of talk about the one biggest moving target in the space right now that can drive your success or complete demise, which is deliverability, infrastructure, and everything about it. I think that we all know when I'm talking with clients, I compare deliverability to a moving target. And this might date me here, but I compare it to, for those of you that remember when you would rent a DVD back in the day and the DVD little logo would bounce around the screen, you know, go ding, ding, ding. And like, that's what the moving target was 2 years ago. Now the moving target to make sure your deliverability is good is something like this. And I think we've all been through many of the months. Like, I think the impetus for some of you starting your own businesses was like October of last year when everything hit the fan, 12 months ago when everything hit the fan, a year and a half ago when Zoho tanked. And so this is still top of mind, and it gets harder and harder and harder every day. So I'm going to introduce myself really quickly. I'm going to pass it over to Ben, who was the designer and creator of this whole session and the idea man behind all of this. And I'm just here to join and BS about it. So you guys know me. I'm the founder of RevGen Labs and the SaaS tool RevReply. I've known most of you all pretty personally. And for those of you that don't, I'm super excited to chat. I'm here just to talk about it. Again, Ben and I will kind of lead the discussion. But Ben, I think it'd be great for you to give an introduction, and then we can kind of kick it off and give everyone an opportunity to introduce themselves.
Yeah. Hey guys, I'm Ben. I'm the founder of RevOps.com. So if you guys need a central database, definitely check it out somewhere over here. But I'm interested to learn too, because personally at my own cold email agency, Next Gen Sales Systems, we have been really struggling with cold email deliverability. So for me, I'm here to learn just like everyone else is. I think we should actually just jump right into it. For me, I'd love for everybody who's a panelist, come off mute and feel free to introduce yourself. The goal for us to start is to have everyone give a quick high-level introduction, and then the top challenges that you're facing with cold email deliverability in 2025, what you think the biggest challenge is, and then also what you think the solution is. We're going to try to limit the panelists' discussion to around a minute. I know that's crazy, but we're going to get into back and forth discussions. And so I know this is kind of a new format. We haven't tried it out before. Christian and I are kind of shooting from the hip here, so we're happy to take your feedback after the call. But the goal here is to get everybody who's on the panel, which we have a lot of them. If you can see, we have 9 panelists here. We really would love to get everybody's feedback throughout. So we're going to start with what's the number one deliverability challenge today. And how we're going to solve it. And then also we're going to circle back with the panelists after some other kind of questions that we have. In addition, if you look at the bottom of your screen where it says polls and quizzes, I believe you're going to see I'm actually going to launch it right now. There's a deliverability question that says, what's the number one deliverability question you have? If you could go, I don't think panelists can do this, guys. So if you guys can go in and fill that out, if you are an actual guest here, we would like you to do that, because I want to know what your questions are. And maybe we can fit it in. We're going to see if there's a trend. But let's kick it off. If everyone can make a quick introduction. And yeah, let's see what the big problems are. Let's see what we can get out of this panel.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Yep.
All right, I'll just kick it off here. Really glad to be here, by the way. It's really nice to see everyone in one place. We all like kind of know of each other and stuff like that, so it's pretty great to be here. I'm excited for the panel, but nonetheless, I'm Kadus. I'm co-founder of Infermail. Kind of got into the cold email infrastructure space in 2022. We were around like the first batch of cold email infrastructure tools, so yeah, I have pretty good amounts of experience across thousands of users and definitely. Yeah, it's and I think the one thing is that was this where I answer the question of the biggest deliverability challenge?
Yes. And again, we can go maybe a little over 60 seconds if it's too hard to answer.
Yeah, no, I can keep it short. I mean, I think generally there is a lot of concerns with deliverability, and like Christian said, it's a moving target. I think one of the biggest things for me is not a specific deliverability concern, like from a technical standpoint, but rather, education standpoint. So I think what ends up happening with a lot of people is like, I mean, we're in this like very small bubble of knowing what to do, and we're kind of like up to date. But with a lot of clients that we work with, or even enterprise clients that I've spoken to, it's like really, really, bad, I guess. Like they're using Instantly, but it's like really, it's still incorrect the way that they're doing it. So I think it's just about the education of the space and constantly informing, people, and because someone might, something that works 3 months ago that someone puts out, someone could like listen to it 3 months late and it doesn't work anymore, and it's like not the up-to-date information. So I think it's like the how information can be fleeting, in my opinion. That's what I think is the biggest challenge, and how it constantly changes.
Great, thanks. I'm gonna call somebody next just to keep it going quickly. Dean, can you go next?
Yeah, hi, I'm Dean Fiacco. I'm founder of scaledmail.com. I got into this whole inboxes as a service game first as an agency owner. We still run it, Beanstalk Consulting. So similar to Ben, I think it's important to still be sending emails for your own business as well because keeps you sharp. As far as number one deliverability challenge right now, I think the main thing for people is being able to quickly diagnose whether the issue is actually their infrastructure or whether it's something else, copy, the offer itself, lists, et cetera. I see a lot of people kind of running around with their like chickens with their head cut off, looking for a silver bullet. And, spoiler alert, I don't think there is one. So for anybody looking for that one fix that's going to change your whole business, I think you're gonna be looking for quite a while. It's generally a mix of a few things that you've got to bring together to really see great results in this game. But you absolutely can still get great results from cold email.
I'm going to go down the list here. Frank, you're next.
Hey guys, Frank Saunders. I run a company called Salesforge, and we have other forges like MailForge, BrianForge, and so on. About six softwares or so, all to do with cold email these days. Yeah, we've been around for about a couple of years, and I think the main challenge around deliverability is we typically slice it essentially across four pillars of what we call the pillars of success. One is the infrastructure pillar. The other one is the software that actually you use to send. Super important that you use the right tech to send the emails out. The copy naturally, and then the final one is the list or the leads, etc. And what we see is that a lot of customers just focus on one of the two kind of the pillars, but totally disregard like let's call it the copy or the lists like in full. And as a result, they're like totally unsuccessful. And then naturally trying to build something that's dummy proof across four pillars is the challenge on the on a software side. But ultimately, yeah, the education piece, I think, what Kiddos was saying, that's a tough one. And sure, you could say we should be educating folks, but educating at scale is a bit tough. So all of us, I think, are educating, which is is a good thing that I think we're all doing, but it is tough to, and naturally the rules of the games are changing. Google's introducing Microsoft more and more stuff. We expect more stuff to come. So it is tough. So education will continue, and we'll have to change as we progress.
Thanks, Frank. And guys, just so you know, we have eight answers in the question, the poll. So go down below if you have a question. I'm going to close the poll probably at the end of everyone introducing themselves so I can look at the answers and see what's good. So just please make sure that if you want to ask a question, go ahead and do that now. So next is Felipe.
Hey guys, nice to meet you all. Great to see some familiar faces. So Felipe from Instantly here. We have more than 35,000 B2B clients sending cold emails, and personally have more than 10 years of experience sending cold emails. And Well, the issue we have is pretty much what I've seen over the past 10 years. Every year I hear cold email is dead, and it's just basically what you all guys have said. Just people kind of give up and they think that deliverability is like just I press one button, done, but it's slightly more complex than that. So yeah, I will say that's mainly the challenge. Just getting people to kind of educate themselves, follow the best practices. Like you will be surprised, like the kind of stuff we see. Like sometimes people they are like, my bounce rate is super high, and then we realize they didn't verify their list. Or let's say they add like 10 links on the email and they're like, your tool is broken, and then we realize, yeah, well, you shouldn't be doing that. So yeah, that's pretty much the main issue we have. But we're making it easier for users. So we unveiled recently something called Copilot, which is basically ChatGPT and it had a baby. So you can talk to it and it will just analyze your campaigns and just solve it for you. So
Very cool. So I think we got Ken Volk.
Hey, thanks, Ben. Thanks, Christian. Glad you guys put this together. I'm the founder of AutoUp. So we're actually a certified Instantly partner, and we've been doing it for 3.5 years there. Currently, we send about 3.5 million emails a month, so we're high volume. Got a decent amount of clients. A lot of those push a lot of volume, a lot of content. And a couple months ago, I started Mailrun.ai infrastructure as a service, as a product. We've automated it. It's Azure based, and I think, I'll just say it. I think the toughest thing right now, from a deliverability perspective, at least today, and this has been true, I think, for quite a few months, it's getting into Outlook, right? I think that's been the big challenge. I'd love to hear more, and I'm sure the conversation will go more there today. But that's it in terms of number one challenge that I see currently. Of course, this stuff shifts. We all know that. And I think that I don't know. I think one of the questions you asked too is, what's the number one way? The best. Number one thing, magic bullet, right? There probably isn't, but and I think Dean said that, and he's right. There isn't one thing, but if there's one sort of North Star that we've always relied on, above all else, it's volume. All right, I think that you look at a guy like my uncle, who's a blue collar entrepreneur in Great Falls, Montana. He's got, he sent in just a handful of emails a month or a day, rather, at best. And I look at him, and do you think he's sweating deliverability? No, I don't think so, right? And so I think there's some wisdom probably in that. Anyway, I'm sure we'll talk more into specifics, but good to meet everybody, and good to be on this.
thanks, Ken. So Namit?
Yeah, so hi everyone. Thank you, Ben, Christian, for organizing this. A super stacked panelist here. That this is going to be an exciting one. Introduction, I'm the founder of Aerosend.io. So essentially, it's a private SMTP infrastructure. Been running an agency for about 2.5, 3 years, and we've been building the Aerosend for the past 12 months, publicly launched recently. The biggest challenge with deliverability, I see like two big challenges coming in. One that I think almost everyone spoke about is the education around deliverability. So there's a huge knowledge gap. So I see some people doing everything right, they know the ins and outs, and the other people doing almost everything wrong. Kind of bridging that knowledge gap is extremely hard. The second, and this just comes up because like my last 5 to 6 calls were there, like people are doing the wrong things and just burning their accounts extremely fast. So I'm sure you guys have heard it too. We hear people just say like, hey, these accounts worked for 1 week and they've stopped working. And now they can't do anything correctly. So that happens when like people are just getting 20, 30% bounce rates and just torching their accounts and blaming cold email doesn't work.
Can you give an example? Like, let's talk about that a little bit. Obviously, we know you got to verify data. You got to keep bounce rate under 2%. But what's another common miscue that people do? Because look, I've done it myself. We've run things for months where our signature was wrong, or like HTML was sneaking into a signature, and it's actually like slowly tanked stuff, right? We've all made dumb mistakes. Maybe give an example to what someone recently has done that you're like, dude. Of course you torched your infra. Like, look at this.
I think obviously the two major ones, it's not about the signature or even links for that. Like, obviously, those are important. I think it's like the pillars. Like, if you sent 100 emails, an email account received close to 0% reply rate, and you've been running that for like 2 weeks, Like, I'm gonna tell you, like, I don't want to deal with your old domains. If you want to come on Aerosend, just buy new domains. That's the thing. So if when you do stuff that's fundamentally super wrong, like obviously bounce it, being like mentioning that because that's the easiest one to clean up. Just verify your lists.
Thanks, man. Peter, go ahead.
So, I'm Peter. I'm the founder of Experiment 5M. We are a lead gen agency. We've grown last year 800%. We've made a lot of mistakes in terms of deliverability, learned a lot of them from them. So, yeah, I'm happy to hear all the experts, all other experts, and see what inputs do they have. What inputs do I have? But basically, in terms of what is the main like issue with deliverability or what's the up and coming, etc., I think that people in this space, outbound space, do not know their craft. So they are just going really, really shallow on the topics that they are getting into. So deliverability, there is like 80 things that you need to do to make it work. And if you won't do like half of them, probably your deliverability will be messed up. So there are many things that you need to take into account. And if you just are looking for the golden grail, like what is the best infrastructure? Like it's just one point from 20, 30 things that you should do,
No
basically.
offense, guys, but none of you guys are the best here. Like we need all of you guys for different reasons. And you know, I think we'll talk about that. In fact, let's move into that. So do me a favor, do the click the little hit your raise hand button if you guys want to respond to this. I would love to get some feedback from you guys. You guys are the boots on the because I'm looking at the attendee list. We've got some crazy advanced people I know that have hugely established agencies. I see some people that I know are just joining the industry and just becoming GTM engineers. In the next 3 months, we're going to see another big change, in my opinion, right? You guys are the spear's tip on this. And if people aren't prepared for the next big change, AI, like an algo change, a Google change, a something change, people are going to get screwed, right? So what is something that people can prepare for? Or what should people do to get ahead of this so they're not over-leveraged? And so if something big changes, they are protecting themselves.
Christian, real quick before the answer, I just launched another poll for everybody. So I took all the answer, or the questions everyone wanted to ask. I put it into another poll for everyone to vote on which question is the most important for them. So let's get to what Christian wants to do, but also vote on that so later we can choose the top two or three questions to follow up on.
Awesome. Dean, kick it off.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also about what's easy for people to do that can make a big difference, right? There are a ton of small optimizations that we could run through, and I'm sure some people will have some of those that really dive deep. But I think the main thing to keep in mind is that this whole space is a big pendulum swing. Things get hard, things get easier. Things get hard, things get easier. Now, where they get hard and where they get easier tends to change. But, I'm sure all of us remember, I think probably like a year plus ago when Google was very, very difficult to inbox. And then it eased up. And, lately, the last year, it's been the opposite story. It's been more Outlook that's been the challenge. Although now we're starting to see some green shoots on Outlook, it seems like, and we're starting to see some more difficulty with Google. So my main message would be just spread your bets on the ESPs. It is a losing game to put all your eggs in one basket and say, Google is inboxing the best right now. I'm going to have all Google inboxes for a client or something like that. And then God forbid they make a big algo change next week and you're completely hosed because you've gone all in on one type of mailbox. So my optimization would just be diversify your ESPs, right? You can do it with one provider or vendor, you can do it with others, but make sure you're not all in on just Outlook inboxes or Google inboxes or an SMTP provider. Try to spread your bets so that you're less fragile if something changes.
Amit and then Frank.
Yeah, so obviously things are going to keep changing, and it's an ever-changing world. Like, we've seen ups and downs in the past 3 years, and I don't think that's going to change itself. What Dean said, absolutely correct. Diversify as much as possible. Use different providers. Make sure, like, you actually have a conversation from whoever you're buying that they're using the best practices, whether that's Google, Outlook, SMTP. Anything can go down at any moment. Providers can go down too. So when you're dealing with scale, so when you diversify, you can kind of predict what's happening with the market, make sure that your business is continuously running. That's one of the most important things. At the end of the day, like, most defense systems were built to keep true spammers out. Like, they weren't like, they aren't really optimized. Like, and the goal isn't like, hey, like, we're going to ban cold email completely. So yes, you get it in the mix of things because you're trying to do a lot of volume, but there are people out there that send fewer emails per day from their main inbox and bigger companies that still inbox perfectly too.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Frank, go ahead.
So just going to echo sort of Dean around making sure you don't have all the eggs in one basket. So, you know, we run 4 infrastructure products, and depending on the ICP, depending on, you know, who is it that you're targeting, you know, 1, 2, whatever, 3 are maybe better suited than these, whatever, you know. So I don't know. I spoke to somebody in the cybersecurity space and just early on, and in that space, it doesn't make sense to have a dedicated IP SMTP solution in play. So you should be using shared servers, and that's really the solution. So it really depends on who is it that you're targeting, and then you should pick at least 2 ESPs. Not one. So in our case, across everything, you know, we have different domain registrars, servers, everything. So the more layers, it's just like, you know, you have multiple secondary domains. If you also use multiple domain registrars and multiple servers, then these are the multiple layers that you're introducing. So that's on the, you know, the infrastructure front. Yeah, these are kind of my general thoughts that, you know, you definitely need multiple layers because, yes, we also expect from Google, Microsoft to see more changes. And then it's not just also on an infrastructure front that you have to kind of think about stuff, but you also have to think from a sequencer front as well. Which sequencer do you use? And what we're seeing a lot of folks, especially the sophisticated ones and that do a lot of volume, that they also use at least 2-3 sequencers. At any given moment as well. So it's not just the infrastructure front, it's also the sequencer front and naturally data provider front. So the more, essentially you should be using 2 plus on every single pillar is how we look at stuff, so yeah.
I wanna echo that sentiment, right? I know multiple people have seen, I have one friend personally who just lost 10,000 domains because they were all on one thing. Right. We all know about other providers that have lost domains. We all know about providers that have lost, you know, their access to certain elements of their infrastructure. And I'm talking about on a personal level. So if you are, for those of you listening, if you're buying domains and you start getting to 500, 1,000, 10,000 domains, you might want to start thinking about putting those on 2 Porkbun accounts or Spaceship and Porkbun. You may want to think about opening 2 different Cloudflare accounts to manage your name servers and all of those different things. And so this is becoming vitally important. 2 different sending platforms, all of that stuff. Because if one thing goes down, you gotta have a backup in place. So just my personal opinion. Ben, you got any questions coming in?
Yeah, we do. The top one, you guys made it hard for me because we have a bunch of ties here, but we got one that says how to monitor domain health in real time. So we'd love to get feedback on that. Does anyone have a want to come on that?
Go ahead.
So, I can think. So obviously, like, there's no proper domain reputation scale, and I wish like Google and Outlook just gave that. So what we've been doing in the back end is kind of building this for all Aerosend customers. And I think like this is going to be super valuable for everyone is we use all the metrics available to us to kind of calculate whether your domain's healthy or not. So number one is your actual warm-up reputation, where we say that, like, hey, if it's good, that's a good, okay sign, but if it's bad, stop sending from that domain. Second, run inbox placement tests biweekly. If it lands in the inbox, that's okay. If it's not landing in the inbox, remove that domain. Third is, like, watch reply rates by domain. So this is important. Like, look at individual reply rates by domain. Remove the bottom 20% every single month. Same concept at bounce rate by domain. Remove the top 20% every single month as a general rule, and then look at bounce types. So when you look at all these five things at the same time, it kind of tells you a story, and you can actually frame it to see what domains are burnt, which ones you need to replace, and which ones are healthy.
Awesome. Peter.
We are basically just monitoring reply rates. If the reply rates are good and we are seeing that they are above 3-4%, it means for us that everything is running smooth. But when the reply rates are lower and we see that the campaigns that we are running are going down, we are usually just switching up domains, and that's basically it, and switching out all the infrastructure, because we always have backups. We have like three setups that we are running all of our campaigns, and we are changing them every 2 weeks. So basically, usually we have time before something is messed up, and we are using new fresh domains for next 2 weeks. And so we are not diving deep into deliverability. Before, we do not see any kind of drop in our performance, and it works pretty well.
Nice.
Dean. Peter, are you, real quick, I have a follow-up there. Peter, are you tracking by domain and by inbox on deliverability, or is it just at the campaign level?
Basically on the campaign level, but we are setting up campaigns in the way that we can test also deliverability. So if we are running our campaigns like from these accounts, we usually try to have like exact number of emails, exact number of domains that we are running tests on, so we know that it's not the campaign fault, but it's the deliverability fault in terms of performance. So we just segment all of our campaigns and at the same domains, the same mailboxes, and we run in the same time. So we will know next 2 weeks what campaigns we are running on what email accounts.
Dean.
I want to talk about deliverability tests, because I think they get a bad rap for figuring out what's going on. The problem with deliverability tests is that people use them to determine whether they are inboxing, which I don't believe they're that useful for, especially on a campaign level. But what they can be very useful for is diagnosing whether you have a domain reputation problem or not. And as a process of elimination, right, it's our first step. If someone suspects from declining reply rates, is it my infrastructure? We run a deliverability test. If it looks good, 10 out of 10, that's just the beginning. Now we have a bunch of other things we need to investigate. All right, so it doesn't necessarily mean you're inboxing on your campaign, but you can be reasonably certain that the infrastructure itself, the domain reputation, is somewhat intact. Now, if you get 5 out of 10, 0 out of 10, you're going to spam on a deliverability test with an innocuous email, you can be pretty damn sure that you're not inboxing on a campaign. And so using it to root out your damaged infrastructure is a worthwhile exercise. We like Email Guard for this, Mail Reach, whatever your preference is. Smart Leads got it integrated. I think Instantly does too now. Run the deliverability test. Don't assume that if it's good, you're off the hook. But if it's bad, you definitely have something to do. And then you're going to want to do a domain swap with your inbox provider, and swap out the damaged domains for something fresh.
To that point, go ahead, Christian.
I like mail-tester and aboutmy.email. I haven't used, no offense, Felipe, I haven't used Instantly. I haven't used Smart Leads ever. I'm always a little bit incredulous. I'd be interested to get some Felipe's take on, mailbox scoring as well, because like I've never really trusted it from most providers because it's not your expertise. And generally, you don't necessarily care that much, no offense again. But I'd love to get a little take on that at some point. But yeah, that's how we diagnose ours first, is mail-tester or aboutmy.email. If we're not getting a 10 out of 10 there, then we got something much more serious that we got to go diagnose. So
something that we're launching at RevyOps in about 2 weeks is a dashboard to show results by domain and then down to the inbox level. In fact, I can show you kind of a concept that we put together for our dev team while they were building it, but it looks something like this, where you'll be able to pull campaigns by date and then be able to see the inboxes and the domains by reply rate by provider, and then be able to get a roll up of what provider, what inbox provider works, and also on the xyz.cos. For me, this is critical because the deliverability is part of it in terms of the tests. But for me, I want to see in live time, like, where's my actual results coming from? What's actually working? And maybe in one campaign to another, this isn't a good sample size, but let's say you're doing this across clients, across time. This is something that I want to do. And so what we're building at RevyOps is the ability to hook into Bison, SmartLead, Instantly, PulseVibe, all at the same time, pull all campaign data for a single client and multiple clients and be able to run domain analysis to see what's working. Because for me, as a cold email agency, I can stop sharing. I was frustrated when I had only one provider, and when something would go wrong, I wasn't sure if it was the sending platform or if it was the inbox provider or if it was the domains or what. And everyone would seem to point fingers at each other. So for me, I can only speak for myself. For me, as a cold email agency, I wanted to diversify across multiple providers, to your points, and try different things like XYZ and .co, because everyone has an opinion. But for me, I want to see, like, what are the actual results? So, by the way, we are taking beta users, so it's free. If you guys want to check that out again, somewhere here at RevyOps.com, I would love feedback on that dashboard as we go live with it. So that's my take.
You got another question? Otherwise, I got a direction, but happy to just jump into questions.
Yeah, so we got another, we got two fours. So what is the best way? This is a Ken question. What is the best way to inbox in Outlook?
It's a great question. I think that everybody seems to say that they have, the answer, right? And I thought one of the most interesting things that I saw on Twitter maybe 2 months ago. I'm sure you guys all know Taylor Herron, and he called out what I was thinking, which is, like, I would love to see real world results of somebody at scale with proof at volume saying that they're getting in and showing it. Because I think everyone who says they got the way to get in is full shit. And I tend to agree with Taylor. And I've talked to people who have a lot more data than I do. It's like, are you seeing anything? And pretty much the thesis is, like, if we're talking 10,000, leads and up, people aren't really getting in, right? You can run inbox placement tests and some sort of, smaller campaigns. You can do it. We actually have a client that, it's a private client, but we're running a pilot with them. We are getting about a 3.2% reply rate. But right now, it's not any sort of volume where I could say credibly, right, hey, we've got the magic sauce here, 'cause I don't think we have it. What we are doing, though, is we're getting really draconian in what we're doing. And I mean radical in terms of domain age. I think it matters a hell of a lot. We are getting domains that are decades old. We got people talking about, buying them. I'm not kidding. 20 years old, 25 years old. That's what we're doing. And we're attaching them to mail run boxes, which are now just, 10 inboxes per. So we're going to send a really, really low amount of volume per domain. I think that probably matters. I think the copy matters. I think all this stuff matters. But is it provable at scale? I can't say that it is yet. But so far, it's encouraging and it's radical. I think you have to be radical. The other thing that we're looking at, and maybe this is part of a broader discussion, like, on the whole, but I think this is fascinating because this group, myself included, nobody here talks about subdomains, right? Does anybody use subdomains? And there's this group that I was speaking with. They're out of the UK, and they're looking at me like, "Wait, you don't use subdomains? What's your problem? Like, it's the best way to do it." And I'm like, "Oh, well, tell me more." And so they did a deep dive, like, showed me their screen, showed video, the whole thing. And these guys are just racking it up. It is the best that I've seen, in terms of Outlook, in terms of whatever. So I think there's something there, and our dev team, where we got some stuff in the can, we're looking at that. So I think that this calls for, like, radical measures that, nobody's quite talking about yet. Things that are just sort of insane, over the top. So anyway, point is, I'm like anybody. I don't think I have the a real answer, but those are some of the things that we're kicking around and exploring. But I think you have to go to some pretty extreme measures to do this at scale that matters.
So I think that's leading into a great area of topic that you guys can speak on and you will be ultimately unbiased on, because this is purely on the side of the buyer. Is first off, age domains, Ken, I want to know where you're buying them, and so does everyone else. Sorry, it's going to blow up your market, but you got to tell us now. You said it. The second is I call ever-warm domains. So again, generic domains, you know, that we warm up, we're able to move them as long as we change the redirects very easily, right? Which is something that all of us, as we're experiencing client churn, we're like, well, screw it. Well, now I got to go buy new domains, right? So I want to know your guys' opinions on Everwarms. And then I want to know your opinions on TLDs. We've done testing, but we haven't been very scientific across 15 TLDs in the past 9 months. I want you guys to give us the juice on these three things.
Well, I'll just reply to your first question. I'm candidly not informed enough, in my opinion, to give like what I think would be an educated answer on some of those TLDs. I've got some thoughts, but yeah, I mean, you can get these age domains from GoDaddy, you know, from GoDaddy auctions, right? Just put in your filters. Domain age is one. You can get them for a dollar, right? It'll cost you know, 10, 12 bucks, sometimes 20 bucks maybe for transfer renewal fee. Essentially the same cost as getting them elsewhere, right? So and there's a ton out there, but I don't hear everybody talking about doing it. But we've got almost 1,000 at this point. We've been buying them like crazy over the past few months, so nearly 10,000 invested on like decades old domains, just in case they want to raise prices or something crazy happens.
Love it. Dean, hit me with it.
All right, let's go with the TLDs first. I think people there's too much brain damage going on trying to find the TLDs that work and don't. What I've found, yes, .com is definitely king, but that being said, there are a lot of other options that seem to perform almost as well. .co, .io, come to mind, .net, .org, right? Anything that's been around for a while tends to work well. I think the other one that people don't think about enough is the geo domains. They tend to be cheap. .co.uk, .de, .kr, right? Obviously, there's whole countries of people using these for a legitimate business. And so they can inbox well. They tend to be inexpensive. So that's something to look at. On the age domains discussion, we have definitely seen that that can be the, you know, if there is a silver bullet to getting an Outlook, a very, very, very age domain definitely seems to be it. We have done some testing where if you plug in a domain into Spamhaus, they have a score. I got to find the page for it, but you know, it's a number score, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it can go negative. Generally speaking, if you're over a three with the domain and you can test the domain before you even buy it, you're going to probably inbox to Outlook at a higher rate than if it's 1, 0, or in the negatives. So I got to think that that's part of Outlook's algorithm. I'm sure it's not the only thing that they're considering, but I wouldn't be surprised if they are considering that and some weighting that they're doing. So something to think about there. The other thing with aging domains and parking them, I think, yeah, people do not necessarily look at the email address as much as people think. I think generics are probably underappreciated. And one thing that we've been trying to enable at Scaled Mail has been the ability to just buy domains and park them. So that you're not incurring the inbox cost right away, because there does seem to be a deliverability lift, not as dramatic as a 20-year-old domain, but if you can get over the 30-day mark, the 90-day mark, the 6-month mark, it does seem to make a significant difference. And if you think about it from Google or Microsoft's perspective, it makes sense, right? They don't want people spinning stuff up and blasting. So if you can just get over these humps of, you know, even that initial 30 days, it seems to make a big difference. On deliverability overall.
Yep, agreed. Anyone else have some insights they want?
Peter does.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with buying cage domains. Like, no one in this space is talking about it like enough, I think. And most of people are just buying new domains and warming them up for 2 weeks just because Smartlist said that 2 weeks is enough, and they are doing it, and they are like a little bit worried about not providing results just because they are like launching too fast. I know some agencies that even wait 60 days during warm up just before they start outreaching to people. And you, in the meantime, you can do LinkedIn and you can like contact 800 people and get 20 meetings for your clients. So not always cold mail is the best response if you want like start the campaign really fast. And I think that that's the next mistake. So starting too fast with all of these campaigns. Also, I have hypotheses, but I cannot like say that it's true or it's not true. I think that all smart leads warm-up pools, they are not good just because I know other infrastructure that I'm using at currently, and they are doing warm-up the way that your actual way mail, how you will be sending, they are doing the same way warm-up. So they are not using AI to generate all the emails. They are doing the same emails in their warm-up pools, and they have their own accounts, and like results are really good on this infrastructure. So, yeah.
Caduce or Felipe, any of you guys have any opinions on that? Felipe, you're on the other side of the instantly fence, so anything?
Yeah, I think like you guys pretty much said like what I want to say, like in domain H. There is this list, like spam house is a really good source for like what kind of domains you should be using. I was trying to find the exact list. I don't know if they still have it, but they had like a ranking where you could like check any domains. Like I saw, for example, once that .us domains tend to underperform for some reason. Never done the test, but they have a list specifically which domain. So what they do is they analyze what kind of domains are used for spamming. So they are sort of like curse before you even use them. I'm going to try to find that list because it's pretty useful as well. But I think it's worth experimenting. I heard people using like .click domains as well, .top as well. Never done it. I still stick to .com and .co, but I think it's worth testing it. And for buying H domains, I think Ken mentioned GoDaddy. You can use almost every domain register. Most of them, they have this option where you can just purchase domains for $1 and just test on your own. And yeah, when it comes to generic domains, we did a study and there was basically no difference. Like people don't care. I think something I can strongly recommend agencies is just have a bunch of like pre-warm accounts. So you can like immediately start sending emails from day one and just explain to your client that you will swap them at some point with like their branded domains or email accounts. I think like obviously like a lot of people will kind of push back and they'll be like, yeah, I want to use my own brand. But for those who don't, they'll get results very quickly. So yeah, that should work. And one last thing when it comes to warm up, sort of like to defend like the competitors, you know, because we like to keep it fair. The market is big enough for everyone. You know, when it comes to orders, like under warm up processes, you know, like honestly, like warm up, like email warm up is not like the holy grail for like email deliverability. Like if you have a really bad offer and copy, like warm up is not going to save you from that. The one trick that I've seen agencies doing is sort of like the automate, like super cool automation. So for example, they will use whatever sequencer they're using, could be Instantly, Smartly, whatever it is. They use an API and then they do like inbox placement tests, and they also measure like the reply rate. So they track both. And whenever like, and they build their own internal formulas as well. And whenever like the inbox placement goes down, because like Dean said, inbox placements can also tell you if you're on a spam list. Or for example, if reply rates are going down, you immediately put the all the email accounts related to that domain on warm-up only. And we've seen some guys like Jason, like some people like know Jason from like some outbound communities, maybe he's watching right now, who sort of warm up for like 2 to 3 weeks, and then they can recover the deliverability for that domain. So that could work, and I think that's worth experimenting as well.
Appreciate that, Felipe. Caduce.
Yeah, so I wanted to chime in. I mean, basically a lot of what was said, I agree with. Domains don't really matter too much. We still stick with the .com just because it's the safest option, just from like a software standpoint. But one thing that we have experimented with, and it's working pretty well, is that we realized that, I think a lot of you guys mentioned parking a domain, age domains. So if a domain ever was to get blacklisted at scale, like similar to maybe what's happening with some people right now, I think what we've seen is that we submit, with Spam House DBL, we submit delisting requests, and at first it was a little bit difficult to crack, but after some time we figured out a way to get it about to like 68.3% success rate where it gets delisted. And I think those domains are very much parkable. Maybe you won't use them right away. Maybe that might be a red flag, but the success rate is high enough where you could probably park a lot of those domains for some time and reuse them. So I think it's just something that I've learned over the, the past months of just testing this with our users and seeing this. So that's just my take.
As a follow-up to that, what's the process to get them off the list? What are you doing?
Yeah, basically, I mean, they have like a form where you submit the domain that they blacklisted, and then you give a reason as to why it should be unblacklisted. Sometimes like it's either two reasons. It's either one of them could be a technical misconfiguration, which has happened with us sometimes as well in the very beginning when we were building the infrastructure. And then the second reason, it could be just like you being listed as spam. Again, this is like kind of vague and ambiguous the way that they explain it. So I'm just kind of explaining it the way that it is on the site. But you basically just explain in sentences. You literally write sentences and stuff like that, and then yeah, it gets like, and then you have to wait. The delisting is not right away. It takes anywhere from 24 hours to up to 14 days. But again, like those domains could be parkable for future use, especially for like a lead gen agency or someone that's doing cold email, like hundreds of thousands of domains at scale. So that's just, I hope that kind of answers the
Are
question.
you alerted? Like, so when it comes off, do they say you're good? Like you're out of jail? What does it look like?
I don't think that
That
they're alerted. I don't think it's like an alert. I think we check, but we've seen that. And I think if I could pull up the like the way that we do it. We haven't really disclosed a lot of it, but that's just what we've seen.
And the last follow-up piece is there any residue on these once they come off the list? I've always been curious about that because I know that you can, park them and you can let them cool off a little bit and then can bring them back. I think this is for anybody here as well. Is like, is it like that, that sub that got crushed near the Titanic where like it had so many dives, but all of a sudden it just blows up,
Yeah. So what we've seen is that like when we do delist a domain, and it ends up getting off of a blacklist, they're usable and they don't get listed like in a short amount of time where that is the culprit. So like I again, it's not very definitive information. It's still something that we've been doing for some months, but it is a unique take that we've seen where they do get delisted and shortly after, everything is good to go. So like, I think it's a bit, it's not something that you can really target and be like, all right, this works and or this doesn't work. I think it's more like something we've seen. We know that the delisting works, but I don't know if the residue is there. Maybe it could be, but I'm not sure.
Frank, do you agree with that take? Do you feel like there's a residue, or I'm using the word residue, like, you get the point, but what do you
Yeah.
think?
Well, yes. I mean, I just want to maybe add a point that was made by someone. I can't remember. But it was, I think it was Dean, around geo domains. So we see actually. So yeah, the .com domains is the king, and the .co as well is kind of following with that, and then a few other ones. But we do see far better performance actually from geo domains. Far, far better performance actually. And because we send hundreds of millions of emails, but. And one of the reasons that could be actually is because in markets, I don't know, like Germany, France, and so on and so forth, folks actually send localized copies. So they don't send actually emails in English. They send in a local language. And that what that means is less likelihood of being flagged as spam naturally, right? More replies, etc. So it actually keeps your domains healthier. So from our data, sending hundreds of millions of emails a month, you can definitely see higher performance than .com domains, but this only applies, most likely for Europe, because within Salesforce you can send localized copies, so that maybe our data is slightly different than the data for the rest of the folks. And then yeah, the other point I just want to probably add around sort of pre-warned domains, mailboxes, kind of going to echo that. So we also provide that, and When it comes to domain age, we also typically, if somebody is in a rush, we typically recommend actually to use that and then swap them over to branded domains. But we still go down the route of definitely recommending branded domains that whenever you can, because from our internal data, if it is not branded, you get more spam hits from what we're seeing. So definitely branded domain is what we typically recommend. But if you're in a rush, yeah, get the pre-warm domains, which is something you get with us as well. So.
Peter, I think you're next.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so basically I agree with most of stuff. I'm thinking also because from my experience, when I had like really good campaigns, I was never landing in spam, and this campaign never landed in spam. Like, for example, event campaigns that we are doing all the time, like inviting people to attend events. We are just not landing in spam in this kind of campaigns, or like really cool value proposition, strong value proposition. So I think that there is something about even copy and what we are sending, basically, in terms of deliverability. If the value is so obvious that everyone replies, probably you will be not marked as spam. For example, next campaign that we will doing is like, we will refer you one client if you will refer us another client. Another type of campaign that almost no ever lands in spam, like in our case, based on our campaigns that we have. So that might be also like important.
Namit, you're next.
So kind of want to backtrack here, and I actually have a question for Ken because he said something really cool. So might be different. So Ken, would love to know more about subdomains and like what you spoke about, because never explored that, didn't even know if that was a feasibility. And now you've piqued my curiosity.
Yeah, no, it's likewise, man. We're in the same boat because you look at all the people that probably we all know and follow and pay attention to. No one's talking about it. And I saw these guys from the UK and they said, you guys are all morons. No, you're not doing the smartest thing out there. And this is really recent, right? And so we're actively looking into it. I don't have any compelling, like, hard concrete information. Other than these guys are claiming to use them, they are using them and the results are looking pretty good. And so there's lots of different, just from a domain cost perspective, you buy the domain and you can, of course, provision many multiple subdomains. And I don't know if it should be many, maybe it's a few, but we're very much like into the thick of the early stages of R&D on it. I wish I knew, but I just wanted to mention it here. This is the right place to do it, I think, just as a discussion point, because I'm curious if anyone else had heard this. I just know that, on the whole, our space just doesn't talk about this stuff, right? And so I think the biggest thing too in this and everything is to challenge everything. I approach all this stuff with, honestly, with great humility, because I don't know. I feel like I don't know anything, actually. It's easy to say that this is true and that's true, but like there's all kinds of examples, right? People talk about like copy fatigue and that's going to get you. Well, we've got probably a dozen campaigns over different clients that just haven't changed. They haven't changed over years, 2 years. So if the ESPs are really fingerprinting the copy, wouldn't have we had to do something there? Right. So, or is it really what's happening is the end users, the prospects who are getting these emails are hitting in spam, and that's why you're having declining performance. It's not the copy itself. But people position this as though it's just, oh, that's true. And then somebody sees it, reads it, and that's true. And there's a thing to post about. And I think that, I hate to say it, but, the cold email space is just a, ground zero for just bullshitters. Right. And so I think like that's just true. And so I think that like challenging all this stuff is important. Getting your data, doing it yourself is so important. And just thinking outside the box, whether it's subdomains, whatever. So anyways, sorry, I don't have a good answer in terms of like the viability of subdomains, just that like it's something that we're looking at and hope to have more clarity on hopefully soon.
Felipe. Christian, did you want to say something? Yeah.
Go ahead, Felipe.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. This is a very interesting topic. So I did a test some years ago And what we found out is that the subdomain is linked to the reputation of the main domain, but because of, you know, how things change, it could have changed. So I think it's worth doing a test again, because this used to work, like I'm talking about like 7 or 8 years ago, and then they tied the reputation of the subdomain with the domain. Maybe they change it back of like they're isolated, and then you can save up on domains, which would be awesome. That would be excellent news, actually. But yeah, so it's a very interesting hypothesis for sure.
So I do have some color to add to that, and this is not what the mailbox guys here are going to want to hear, but it actually is in line with what Felipe says, and you're on the side of the sender here. But I spoke with someone that's part of MOG. For those of you that don't know, MOG is like the Jedi Council of cold email. They wouldn't want to talk with any of us. And he said that like things are really the way of the domain. Everything rolls back to domain reputation. So whether you've got 20 inboxes or one inbox, it doesn't matter. It's just going to be how quickly do you burn out the domain. So the question is, could you do 3 inboxes or 1 inbox sending 45 or 3 doing 15? It's probably debatable, not to piss all of you guys off here, but that's a real question. That is what I've been hearing lately, and it makes a lot of sense, right? You burn a domain and everything's gone. But the sub question I want to ask to all of you guys that are selling inboxes infrastructure, obviously I sell my infra via word of mouth, but what is the answer you give people when they say, what are the IPs of your inboxes? Go ahead, Dean.
All right, well, this is an easy one. And on your first point, by the way, yeah, I tend to agree. I think mailbox reputation is overhyped. It's all about the domain. The domain's damaged, swap the domain, and you'll fix the problem, you know, 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 10, from what I know. What was the question again, Christian?
When people say, where's the IP? Is this Azure?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is an easy answer because we do mostly Microsoft and Google, and we do some SMTP. And the answer is true on all of these. We're running on shared IPs, and shared IPs get a bad rap because the reason why Microsoft and Google deliver better is because you are sharing IP space with essentially every company that runs in the Western world. So you're hiding your cold email amongst all of those transactional emails, all of that B2B business activity, and that's a good thing, not a bad thing, right? Our SMTP product, to give you an idea, we're leveraging a similar model. We have a shared IP solution, so it's different than dedicated. You know, the main benefit of, you know, putting your SMTP inboxes on something like a SendGrid or a Mailgun or an SES is, again, to ride along with a bunch of traffic that is not cold email. And so to be less, make it less apparent that you're, you know, in their eyes, a bad actor, and have those IPs quickly identified and spam flagged. So I think shared IPs get a bad rap. There is definitely a case to make that, you know, dedicated IPs make a lot of sense. I think it makes more sense personally in sequencer world, but I'll let others weigh in on that. But that's my answer.
What about if people say, are these Philippines IPs? Are these like US IPs if they're getting just Google
in? Oh, good question. So yeah, data centers matter, right? So if you're registering, again, you know, I forget who said this earlier. I think it was Frank, right? Like, where is spam coming from? If you register in India, there's a lot more spam coming from India than there's coming from Finland, right? So you don't have to be in the US. Frankly, I'm betting that if you're in a French data center, you're probably delivering better than if you're in a US one, just based on what everybody does. So, you know, again, it's zig where others zag. If everybody's sending cold email from certain spots, right, because they're trying to exploit cost differentials and things like that, well, just try not to look like everybody else that's sending spam, and you're probably going to do better. You know, Western Europe probably delivers pretty damn well, right? US still delivers pretty damn well because there's just so much activity, would be my guess, right? Buying Indian IPs, you know, for Microsoft and Google, probably less deliverability than, you know, especially when sending to US data centers and European inboxes and things like that. But, you know, again, you got to weigh that, you know, against your costs and things like that. But hopefully that's helpful.
Dean, I have a follow up to that.
Yeah.
How do you, so let's say there's a newbie listening to this right now. They have no clue like how to do that. where would you go to choose your data center? Or do you have to choose a provider that chooses the data center? Or is there a configuration within the data or within the inbox provider, excuse me, that chooses that?
So, yeah, good question. I think most inbox providers, ourselves at Scaled Mail included, we default to US IPs 90% of the time because that's the answer people want to hear. We have started to incorporate more European stuff because I think based on initial testing that it makes sense that there's less spam coming out of Europe than the other way around. So, and so far, the deliverability has been at least at par, if not better than US stuff. And I would assume most inbox providers here are doing the same thing. I don't think anybody's doing registering in India or something like that, but it's a pretty easy question. Hey, when you're registering Google and Microsoft mailboxes, where are you registering them? That's the question, that's the answer you want.
I think Frank's been
Amit?
waiting a while.
Oh, I could. Sorry, go ahead.
Frank, I think you've had your hand in up for a while.
Caduce.
I think it was from the last time. Sorry.
Oh, got
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to chime in. So I know, Christian, you asked, like, what IPs do you guys use? It's Azure IPs. That's what we use. That's what we've been using for some time. But I also wanted to quickly state one thing about shared IP infrastructure and dedicated IP infrastructure, which we found to be true over the past year, is that so at Infermail, we use a dedicated IP infrastructure. It's not shared. But both of them have their pros and cons. I'm not here to be like, well, use a dedicated IP. But what we've seen is that if you look at the warm-up schedule of dedicated IPs, if you go like on AWS or any like cloud provider, their volume of dedicated their volume of email sent on that dedicated IP drastically increases day by day. And so we're like thinking, well, okay, so that means like probably on a dedicated IP, you need to send more emails for it to be safe or considered, not, a warning sign for an ESP. And that seemed to be true because we ran tests across all of our users again and found that the people that were not blacklisted had significantly higher inboxes and on that IP, which is interesting, which naturally means they're sending more volume. So I kind of wanted to chime in on that because I think it's a take that I think some people in the cold email infrastructure space know, but they kind of decide what's like better or worse or whatever. And I don't think that's the case. I think it's more so how you send emails. And if you also test that theory, you can, let's say if you go to like Mailgun, and if you're not sending emails consistently, like we use Resend for our marketing emails. If I miss a day of sending emails, they say that my deliverability is going to get worse because I'm on a their dedicated IP, and they're like, yeah, you have to send emails every single day. So I thought that was interesting, kind of like the parallel between the two of like transactional and cold email and the infrastructures that are shared between the two.
Amit.
Shared versus dedicated. So very interesting topic here because shared really works when you're sharing it with other people who don't send cold emails. So obviously, like Google and Outlook, you guys use shared IPs and then your IPs are being used by actual people. But what we've seen is kind of when you go into the space of like private infrastructures and now you're sharing IPs with a bunch of other people who are mostly sending cold emails. That's when things get mixed. So definitely like that's why we're favoring dedicated IPs in there. And that's kind of working. Other thing with like IP location, Christian, that you said. So we've been doing tests for a while on this. And I think like another 10, 20 million will have better results. What we've seen is like when you're emailing North Americans in general or like the US audience, US IPs tend to work a little better. And when you're emailing within Europe, those IPs work a little better. That could be pointing towards data centers. Still need to conclude like with a higher volume, but that's what we've been leveraging right now.
Out of curiosity, that's typically though with SMTP, right? Like that's not,
Yes.
if I go get a Google inbox, whether it's a reseller from this place or this place or this place or this place, are they not all relatively the same? Or if they aren't, how do they differ for those of you guys that can speak to it?
Yeah, n not a question for me. I'm purely talking SMTP, so.
I have a related question. This is Felipe. Is there any risk from the sending platform around IPs, or is it entirely on the inbox or domain providers?
Yeah, there is a risk for us as well, which is why I mean, there are two risks. Well, three actually. One of them is, oh, there is a warm-up risk, right? Because if accounts start underperforming, and they start affecting the rest of the accounts in the warm-up pool, because we don't want to have like accounts that are like bad performance engaging with each other, which is why we are a little bit stricter with SMTP email accounts, because usually Google and Outlook are the ones that send positive signals on warm-up pools. Not that we don't like them, like they're great. Most of people here are probably private SMTP providers, which are great. I think we should all diversify and just mix bit of everything. And then the other one is, yeah. So if we have, like, actually we had cases in the past, like people abusing our platform for sending phishing emails or whatever, and they do start affecting our platform from, an IP perspective. Like there is a bit of a secret sauce there, where we also have our own internal IPs for sending purposes, and also because then we are, letting others use our platform for sending malicious emails, right? So we don't want to allow that. And if the offer is really bad, it's usually it could be connected to that sometimes, like when they're like financial offers or whatever. And yeah, the third one is like a reputation aspect, because if someone will fail because of deliverability, they will most likely blame it on us, like calling me is dead or my platform doesn't work, right? So yeah, I think those are the three main factors.
Yeah, as a follow-up to that, it seems like there's a it's like a good thing to grow, but the bigger a sending platform grows, the more attention you get from the email service providers, right? So how do you negate that attention? And maybe I'm asking a question that doesn't make sense. So this is where maybe you can guide me on if it's a good question or not, but
It's a
I'm
good question.
curious. Yeah.
It is a good question, actually. Yeah. So I think at this point, so because of the volume of emails we send, I think last time I checked, it was like 3 billion emails per month, something like that. But yeah, billions. And at this point, we cannot hide it anymore, right? So we are actually very outspoken, and we have a, we have a communication line with Google. And we asked them one time to one of their reps, hey, are you guys okay with us sending cold emails? And they're like, for sure, as long as you're not spamming people, scamming people, sending phishing emails, we're totally okay with that. They told us, we ourselves as Google, we also have a sales team that also sends cold emails to sell, Google products, right? So it's what people do for selling purposes. So Google themselves, they told us they don't want to ban cold email, right? So that's not something they're looking to do. But anyone watching like can be relieved about that one. As long as you're compliant, literally what it tells, like as long as you're compliant, they're totally okay with it, which is why, ourselves, whenever we build features, even though we want people to scale their sending, we have a lot of stuff on default. Like, for example, one thing we noticed is mimicking human-like behavior, like ideally not creating sending spikes. That's like a number one thing that you want to do. And actually, that's what Google told us. Like, just make it look and feel as human as possible, right? So humans don't put thousands of links. Humans don't just blast hundreds of emails every day because no one can type as quickly. So one thing I will strongly recommend people is using longer delay between emails. So before we had, I think, a default of 5 minutes minimum, zero randomized, but something we changed very recently, and it created like a positive reply rate increase across all of our users. We increased the base, the default, to 9 minutes minimum, and then a randomized of 5 minutes. So that pretty much allows you every 5 to 6 hours to send 20 to 30 cold emails, per email account on an entire campaign. So you can basically, contact everyone on a range of like 6 hours, right? The longer the delay between emails, the better results we've seen.
As a follow-up, real quick to that, and this gets into you said it, they have to seem more human, and also I'm curious, how do you handle that at the warm-up pool level? Because it's something that in my own discovery across talking to a lot of you guys, because I'm looking for more infrastructure, I'm in the market, and I'm diversifying, and so one thing that somebody has told me is that the quality of the message sent in the warm-up pools matters significantly, and I'm curious what your take is on that. And then I'm also curious, like it seems like you guys have different warm-up pools for different prices, and I'm curious how that works and if that matters.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Like, to be honest, The first version of our warm-up pool was not good at all. I'm talking like 3 years ago. It was like it looked very like ChatGPT like, and it used like repeating words and so on and so on. So yeah, we work very hard on like improving it and making it look and sound as human like as possible. So for example, when you read the email threads of the warm-up emails, they look like a normal conversation, right?
Felipe,
So
real
that's
quick,
the
what is a warm-up pool for? I'm sure there's somebody in here who's like, what the heck is a warm-up pool? Maybe that's too simple for some of us, but like, really, what is it? What's happening?
Oh, it's basically using AI and automations to generate human-like conversations. So right now, let's say you connect your email account and I connect mine to the warm-up pool, they will start talking to each other. And then on the eyes of the two largest infrastructure providers, which are Google and Outlook, they will be like, oh, so these guys, they are talking to each other, so they must be legitimate email accounts. So let's allow them in the inbox, right? So it's pretty much just creating positive signals so your reputation increases over time.
Sorry for interrupting. You were saying something else though. So it used to be poor, you said 3 years ago, and then now, what have you done to change it, and how is it? Why does that matter?
Yeah, so I think it's just the quality. So there are a few components. So it's the quality of the message for sure, like you mentioned. Make it look and sound as natural as possible. So we're always feeding the model with like, more like a tone that sounds like what people will normally use. There is also a technical component behind it, also part of the secret sauce. I guess I can share a little bit of that, but like among those warm-up emails, we try to like text only, make sure that the accounts that are engaging between each other, like if the emails start bouncing, they get removed. And then about the, I don't want to overextend here because I'm sure like other people have like a lot of cool stuff to share. But when it comes to like the different ranges of warm-up pools, this is something we have done recently. So what we have found out because of the positive engagement that you get from Google and Outlook, we have sort of like isolated different warm-up pools. So we have one warm-up pool that is like only Google and Outlook, where you can pay an extra fee and you can be part of that. Or if you buy like Google accounts through us, you can be part of it. And the second one is like the general warm-up pool where we have all of the accounts and we obviously take care of that because it's our bread and butter and our business relies on it. And then the last one is something what we call the basic warm-up pool, and it is basically when someone is abusing for a warm-up pool, or let's say they connect too many SMTP accounts, they get sent there. And then obviously, if you want to send your SMTP accounts or private email infrastructure in the general warm-up pool, you have to pay a little bit extra. And the reason for that is very simple, because if you bring your SMTP accounts, we have to purchase or bring Google and Outlook accounts to that warm-up pool to kind of balance things out. So we can generate that positive signals.
Does anyone else? I know that obviously the answer is yes. Who here handles warm up in a unique way? Obviously outside of a sending platform. Curious if anyone's doing that. I mean, do you want to talk on that?
So one advantage of like an essentially private infrastructure is that you see a lot of information, more than like what Google and Outlook show us. Obviously very cool warm-up pools there. Like I know Instantly's one is good. And so at the moment, we're kind of using a completely different service for warm-up. And again, it's all tests and stuff from what we've seen. So we force all customers, it's a mandatory thing for to warm up using warmupinbox.com. I know ScaleMail does Warm.me as well for like as an additional service. So that's something interesting, just based on the concept that when everyone zigs, you zag and you use a different warm-up pool. That's the only different thing we're doing.
Does anyone else here have other things to add to that, the warm-up conversation? So another question I
I
wanted to go ahead.
I just have a funny story on this one. So I had a call a while ago about warming up your like domain and reputation and stuff like that. I had a call once with the guys from Chili Piper. And as you know, Chili Piper, they are basically a tool that allows you to book meetings, so sort of like Calendly in a way, and then you get like a notification, right, that you have received a new meeting and so on. And they were thinking of sending cold emails, from the sales, and they were kind of worried because they've been doing cold emails for like a few years and they never had issues. But then they started hearing about like this, you know, potential risk of burning their email accounts because they're sending all of their cold emails from their main domain, right? And what we found out is that they actually build their own warm-up pool without even wanting to do it, right? So how does it work? Pretty straightforward. Because their main domain, Chili Piper, is tied to the notification that they send users, and people are actually happy to receive a notification. Like people always like open the email and engage with it, and like it's like a positive signal for people. So Google and Outlook sees it like that. So they basically, the Chili Piper domain is like super solid and safe, and that's basically what we realized. I told the guys sure, like you can connect your domain or let's say use a different set of domains for sending cold emails, but because of this reputation, like this sort of warm-up pool you build on your own with your own domain, like without wanting it to do it. By accident, pretty much. Yeah, they're pretty much like okay with it. So I think those are like some funny cases where you will actually end up building your own warm pool and just by building reputation and scaling sending. So
Yeah, I'm super ashamed to admit that back in like 2014, 2015, I used to send myself emails to warm up the pool. That was my way back in the day when I had no clue what I was doing. But I guess I see that there's a daily amount of emails sent on the warm up. So is there a ratio that matters? And for anyone listening, maybe I'm making a fool of myself, but this is my understanding of it, is that there is a certain amount of emails that you want to send per inbox per day, and a certain amount of those should be for warm up. Is that true? Is that not true? And if so, how many would there be per day per inbox?
I'm gonna let others answer, I guess, because
Yeah, go for it.
but they can chime in if needed.
Yeah, feel free to go for it, Felipe. Oh, Dean, do you have it? Did you?
Yeah, I think I'll let others answer. I don't want to take the spotlight.
Dean, feel free. Go for it.
I can jump in. I have a pretty simple rule of thumb for warm up volume, which is 2x your max sending volume, depending on whatever your setup is. So let's say for Google inboxes, you're sending 15, 20, maybe 25 a day cold, then 2xing that is a good rule of thumb that we use internally for your warm up volume. So think 40 a day, essentially, if you're doing 20 cold. You always want to keep in mind you want to stay below the max sending limits for the admin panel or tenant or whatever you're using, right? I've seen a lot of people that have seen, Azure type setups nuked. The real problem has been too many emails getting sent in too short of a time. So, I've never been a big fan of kind of telling people to rip it from 99 mailboxes really hard because you tend to run into those limits and get accounts shut down. So, whatever you're sending cold, whatever that maximum is, 2x the 2x for warm-up volume is a good way to think about it. You're trying to bury the negative signal from your cold outbound in that warm-up, right? That's the whole point of warm-up. So to me, having more warm-up activity that's giving off positive signal is a good way to bury the inevitable complaints you're going to get from your cold stuff.
when you say warm-up volume, is that on a is that over a time period? Is
Now,
that
like a
in
daily basis, let's say, right? So you probably have a max daily sending volume that you're putting into your sequencer for your cold volume. You also want to be thinking about whatever that max volume would be on the warm-up side as well.
And Felipe, are you able to set custom variables on that in terms of the amount of warm-up, or do you guys auto set that?
Yeah, we auto set that, so we take care of that for users. Because what we notice is that, basically, people are more likely to have a negative effect if we give them control versus us like just having an algorithm that will auto adjust things for them to improve deliverability. But also, when it comes to the volume of warm up emails, it's not set on stone. So I think as many of you have said, like whoever comes and tells you like this is the absolute truth about deliverability, like just run. I think you just have to test things all the time. So what we recommend people is like 10 warm-up emails a day, depending on the infrastructure you're using, of course. And then, we have seen users, right, playing with that number. Some people do 5 warm-up emails, some people do 20. And we've seen success stories of people like doing very low volume of warm-up emails, but a very high reply rate. So then the average daily, when you combine the cold emails with the warm-up emails, the average reply rate they're getting on the eyes of Google and Outlook, it's decent and it's not abnormal. I think what you want to do is you don't want to make it look like too artificial. So yeah, I think that's about it. Like always, like have in mind the mimicking the human like behavior, like Google have told us, with what which whatever you're doing, pretty much. So yeah.
Ken?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to, I guess, piggyback on what Felipe said, because I think it's really smart. Just anything that you can do to mimic human behavior, interrupt patterns, so forth. We're pretty similar, I think. We like to start kind of where Dean mentioned, roughly 2 to 1, but we will toggle down almost 1 to 1, and we like to vary it, right? So we like to start at maybe 70, 75% reply rate on that warm up. But every couple of weeks or so, we'll go down. We shift the stuff because we want variability. We want pattern interruptions. And it's easy to do that with the Instantly API. And even this isn't a warm up thing, but just speaking, this is low hanging fruit, easy thing to do, right? We never like to run all of our campaigns static in the same time of day, 9 to 5, whatever. You can create some variability to kick these off 2 hours later, 2 hours before, whatever. So these start and begin and end at all different times. So it's just like a constant, in theory, it's organic. We hope it works. It makes sense. I don't think there's any cost to doing it or any downsides to doing it, but that's kind of how we approach it too.
So I know we're gonna be out of time here in 9 minutes. I got one other question. Peter, did you want to respond to that real quick? And then I'm gonna pivot into one last question, then we're gonna start to wrap up the webinar.
Yeah, that's quick. Also, like doing warm up in the same day that you are sending, it's important. We for some time forgot, and we are doing all the warm up also in the weekends. It impacts your deliverability, so don't do it. Like all warm up should be in the days when you are sending. If you are sending in the Sunday, you can do warm up in the Sunday, but working days is what we are sticking to, and people forget about it also.
So I got a this is going back to one of Christian's points earlier. I was having a conversation with somebody, and he said, I'm gonna quote it. He said, "Been experimenting with a few things." This was in a chat. "We are able to send 1,000 emails per day per domain and 5,000 emails warm up and getting 3.76% reply rate, whereas 3.58 with Google on the first email itself." And then this goes on to a discussion I have with the person where the person's basically saying, look, inbox volume doesn't matter. Domain volume does matter. I also have we typically at our own agency stick to the 3 to 5 rule. This person is saying that is, it's just somebody made it up some time ago and everyone's sticking to it. So whether it's 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 inboxes per domain, there's like this debate. But this guy's saying, well, it doesn't even matter at all. And I can say that from I know somebody who's sending a tremendous amount of volume for their own company, not an agency, and they have 200 inboxes per domain, and they're sending like 200 sends per day per inbox, and they're having great results. And they actually send links in the first email, and it's all Gmail stuff. And I've looked at it. I've just wild. It's wild to me. So I'm just curious, what do you guys think? Like, what is everyone else? Is this all just like somebody made up the rule of 3 to 1, or like, what's the answer here? Go ahead, Ken.
Name, we need to know who they are so they can tell us
Yeah,
the
well, I don't know. I don't know who made it up or whatever, but I think it's a decent, fundamental starting point for most people. I do think a ratio that matters though is sort of what's coming on the inbound side. So if that company with 200 seats and whatever, if they're sending and getting a ton of just core basic email, that's, divorced from what would be cold email activity, you can kind of get away with it, right? And you can do things that other people can't do. If you're like a small shop or just, somebody running cold email, an agency, whatever, game's different. But I do agree though, and we're seeing this more and more, it's about the domain level, not the inbox level, right? And so if you can keep the send per domain lower, we're getting better results. And we're seeing that. And in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be pushing a pretty substantial study that we're doing now that's spanned a couple months, and it's big. It's over a couple million emails, where we're seeing, because instead of sending from 99 boxes per domain, whatever, 50, going just 10, and it's a game changer. It's huge because if you can send 80% less volume per domain, it just it those domains don't wear, right? Your deliverability stays stronger, better. And so I think that we're all kind of pointing to that same conclusion that it is, it's the domain itself. It's not the inboxes themselves, right? And so it's decentralizing further, sending less per domain. I just think that matters an awful lot.
And then we're going to go to Dean in a minute in a second. But to answer real quick on Ken, anybody who comments on this, what is your ideal setup in terms of inboxes to domain ratio and sends per day per inbox? That's for you, Ken.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I mean, I think for Google Workspace, two to three inboxes typically. That's a good starting point. I talk to guys though, like Felipe Fur, if you guys know him, DFY Meetings, one of the best, smartest guys in the space. And he was telling me that for some of his offers that are really good, right? He's ramming 70 emails a day per box, and it's working, right? So if you have a kick-ass offer, you can break some rules, you can bend some rules. On the Azure side of stuff, again, less is more, I think less is always more, with cold email, right? I think it's always better to do, even with a good offer. I think you're safer, you're more conservative. And so from that perspective, we like to do just 10 inboxes per, sending 5 emails per day per box. So it comes out to be at max 50 emails per domain,
Why have I
is
heard
where
on
we.
Azure? I've heard people sending a far higher volume, or I've seen, like, why is it more on Azure? Is there a technical reason for that?
Yeah, a couple. I mean, there's rate limiting issues, which you can talk to Microsoft, they can raise the limits, that's fine. That's easy enough for us to do. We can support that. But we're just seeing, like, just the biggest feedback we got negatively about Azure. And I talked to so many, sort of bigger operators in the space that just, okay, if you don't like this, if we started with Superwave or whatever, what was the reason? What's the negative feedback? I'm talking to people like, say, Matt Lucero. It's that these things, they tend to burn faster. And so if you're going to load up that many boxes and they're all sending that same 5 emails per day or whatever it is, it's just a force multiplier, and it puts a lot of pressure and stress on that domain. And so we just wanted these things to last. We want that deliverability to stay crisp and these domains to last. So it does cost more from a domain investment perspective on the front end, but we think you'd probably be buying them again, in a couple months or whatever, if not. And we've just seen better, much better deliverability, just sending less. Because if you still have the same amount of boxes and same send per box, just spread over domains, the net result is you'll still send the same amount of emails. Just going to be, I think, better architected, safer.
Totally. Dean, go for it.
Yeah, I kind of want to piggyback on what Ken's been saying. The most common question we get, which I'm sure Ken and everybody on this call would agree with, is what's the absolute maximum I can send for this package or number of inboxes? And it's just so the wrong question, because what you're basically saying is, how fast can I burn this out if the offer doesn't immediately land, right? It is worth the slightly larger upfront investment to do less volume on more infrastructure, generally speaking. It's going to last a lot longer. It's a safer approach. And it's much more expensive to replace your whole architecture every 45 days, which I've seen people do too many times. So just because, everybody's going to have, hey, here's your sending maximum, it's not necessarily a goal to hit. To send at the max. Like Ken's been saying, if you take down the volume a little bit, you're going to see better results across the board on every ESP. So, don't necessarily think of the max as the minimum number to send. It's more like a, guardrail to not go over rather than a goal to achieve. So, yeah, that's my thoughts there. And then, as far as the Azure methodology and why more inboxes, it is a way to send more emails at the domain level than you otherwise could. And so that setup on a cost per email basis makes sense, but it is easily abused. It's fragile. And so trying to push it too hard, trying to eke out a couple more sends is just really not a wise move because, to Ken's point, right, you're putting all of that reputational risk on much fewer domains than you otherwise would. And so that's why people see these blow up scenarios. So the TLDR is send less emails from any one domain, you're going to see better results.
And I know we're at time here, so we're going to let Namit finish. And then I also promised every panelist to be able to just talk about their special sauce and what they offer so you guys can go find them. So if anyone has to jump, feel free. There's going to be a recording of this. Panelists, too, if you got to jump, I get it. But there'll be a recording of this and we'll share it with everybody. But Namit, why don't you finish your point and then we're going to start kicking off the final little round where everyone gets to talk about what they do for 60 seconds and where to find them.
Yeah, I'll make this super quick. So I totally think the 3 to 5 email inboxes came up randomly one day and everyone started following it. I don't know if there's like exact science. Obviously, when you use Google and Outlook, you pay per inbox. So the 100 didn't make sense. That's when like the domain volume comes in, and that's what really matters, according to me. If someone can show me 100 inboxes work better, like it's so easy to do it on private infrastructures.
Great. And why don't you actually kick off the final point here, which is where can people find you? What's your secret sauce, and what do you offer people?
Perfect. Yeah. So easiest way to find me is either on LinkedIn or go to aerosend.io, which is the website. We do have a booking link there. What do we do? So we're a private infrastructure, mostly built on the principles that like, hey, if we can do everything right for you and make it as easy as possible, that would ideally give you the best deliverability. So we're building Aerosend with like, give you completed isolated servers, give you dedicated IPs, have backup IPs ready for you, use warm-up inbox for warm-up, and then at the back end, track deliverability for you, replace your domain, send you alerts if anything's wrong, and just track every single metric inside the app, making it as easy as possible to land in the inbox.
Great. Thanks for being a panelist. Dean, go for it.
Yeah, so I'm Dean. You can find me on LinkedIn and X, just Dean Fiacco on both. We are at scaledmail.com. You can book a call with us right on the website. All of our inboxes are available through our self-serve application, so don't have to talk to me to get involved. You can just go in there and point and click and check out. We offer Google, Microsoft, and SMTP. The one thing I think that sets us apart is the support. I think it's not necessarily that difficult to enter the infrastructure space, but as any of the panelists can tell you, there are a million things that can go wrong with your campaigns and your infrastructure. And to me, it makes sense to be able to reach out on Slack, on email, on web chat, and be able to get answers from a human being relatively quickly. And so that's where we hang our hat.
Frank.
Hey guys, so yeah, I mean you can find me on LinkedIn, Frank Saunders guy with the bacon emoji, bringing home the bacon. Otherwise, we do quite a few products on Salesforge. We do descending, AI SDR kind of capability as well under Agent Frank. We do warm up under WarmForge Premium warm up pool, which is separate to descending software on purpose. So there's a few reasons there. We have three infrastructure forges as well, SMTP. Shared SMTP private, Google, Microsoft, so all the four typical things, so you can mix and match. And then we also have a lead product called LeadsForge, where you can search across multitude of databases for leads. So yeah, if you need a de demo or whatever, feel free to ping me on LinkedIn or on the website. We're here to serve.
Peter.
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. It will be hard, but Piotr Mikrut, because it's Polish name. And yeah, I run an outbound agency, but we are not onboarding any new clients. So basically, if anyone has any questions, I can just give a free consulting session for anyone that is interested in terms of deliverability, in terms of messaging, in terms of clay. Happy to meet other founders, and that's it.
Good use.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for having me, Benjamin, on this panel. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Caduce Pro at Life, Kidous Pro at Life, and on LinkedIn, Caduce. If you type that in, I mean, very few people have that name, so you'll find me under Infermail.io. You can visit our website. I think the unique proposition for us, I think why we're special is We were one of the first batch of companies, so we have a pretty large scope on the space of like what we've learned and all the mistakes that we've made, because we've been burnt as well. And but the most unique thing is that our unlimited inbox is at one flat rate, which I think is pretty cool. So if you're a high volume sender and you're looking to have, a couple hundred inboxes, few hundred inboxes, and send pretty rapidly and with great deliverability, I would recommend checking us out. You can book a call with me as well. I'm happy to do that, one-on-one onboarding setup or anything like that. So yeah, and our support is also really great. 16 hours a day, we're always there for you.
Great, Ken.
Yep. So yeah, by the way, thanks for putting this together, guys. This has been fun. This is very cool. But you can find me at mailrun.ai. And I think our sort of unique positioning is, it's severalfold. The first is that they're with us, there's no initiation fee. I don't think cold email is a country club. You can just get in, get rolling. We're fully automated. We've got multiple APIs, so we can provision your boxes quick, get them same day. We're also going to provide great support too, private Slack channel. I'll take a look at your copy. Our team can diagnose all kinds of stuff. And also, what we're doing here for the next few weeks, and particularly for anyone on this call, if they want to do it, any of the attendees, anybody that signs up for our largest plan, which isn't substantial, it's 400 boxes, we're giving away something which is pretty valuable, which will more than pay for it, which is we can tell people and give a Clay template, how to get emails in Clay without using any enrichment credits. Virtually unlimited. So if you're any kind of Clay user, that's a pretty nice to have. So, yeah, thanks again, guys.
Felipe.
Yep. Thank you for everything, guys. Yeah, so you can find us on instantly.ai and myself as Felipe instantly on LinkedIn. Pretty much find me like that, or Felipe instantly.ai. And well, we are just trying to simplify everything technical and deliverability on Instantly. I think that's been our motto and that's our North Star. And yeah, we're trying to create the concept of by prospecting, I guess. So the Copilot feature that we just launched. Pretty new, so it'll be awesome to have you guys trying it out and telling us what you think. But basically, now you can talk to Instantly and it will do stuff for you, prepare a campaign, audit your campaigns, basically anything you want. And don't forget to try all of the providers that you see on this webinar and connect them to Instantly to see how they perform. I think diversifying is the best strategy. So, yeah.
Okay, and Christian.
I was wondering if you're going to come to me. I was going to actually call you out. So, most of you guys know me. Obviously, we've got the Tuesday Triggers community. Anyone that's on the call is welcome to join the community. Just hit me up on one of the channels. Yeah, we sell some infra too, but it's only word of mouth. And we also have RevReply, the tool, so the autoresponder. But more importantly, what I want to get out of this, if there's anyone on the call that is just absolutely banging talent, we are always looking for new people on our GTM team, GTM leads, head of GTM right now. Please ping me. That's it. And I will pass it over to you, brother.
Great. And my name is Ben Reed. I have Next Gen Sales Systems, which is my cold email agency. But obviously, given the branding today, my real interest is RevOps. It's RevOps.com. It's a centralized platform to basically create a unified place where you can put all of your data and create a central place of truth. The goal for me in particular is eliminating repetitive list scraping and deduplication. So if you guys have scattered CSV files, a gazillion Clay tables, you're sick of the 50,000 row limit, and you want a better way to do that, we hook up to Clay, we hook up to Instantly, we hook up to Bison and all the different sending platforms, and we hook up to NAN where you can ingest data from everything you can possibly imagine. Triggify, HeyReach, you name it, create one central view, and then you can push out more triggers to new places like NAN to do better GTM. So we are taking on beta users. We already got a bunch of agencies here, and anybody on this call is my ICP, and we would love to demo it for you. So thank you guys for being involved. This has been really great. I'm gonna have to rewatch it several times because there was so much good value. I already got a bunch of messages here saying there was a bunch of knowledge bombs. So hoping we can do it again at some point, and I'm sure we're gonna have other people on. But thank you everyone for being here. Appreciate you, and we will see you guys on the next one.
Thanks, y'all.
All right. See you guys.
Bye.
Nice to meet you all. See you.